rather shame up or care. If you've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
And you're very welcome along to this week's Team 33 and a call here with you until about 10 o'clock this evening. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can text us on 53106 or tweet us at Team 33. That's all spelled out in words. So coming up on the show tonight, we have Kieran Bradley in conversation with the lads from the Socially Distanced Sports Bar, a podcast that kind of sprang up in the middle of this COVID crisis. It's really worth your while. Go and have a listen to it. It's available on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Some good cracks, some good stories, and quite a bit of sport as well. So it's well worth your while having a listen to that. And if you want to listen back to Kieran's interview with the lads, that's available now on the OTB Podcast Network, which you can get in the OTB Sports app, available in the Google Play Store or Apple Store as well. But before that, it is Old Firm Week, and it is a big week for Neil Lennon and Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard's Rangers are currently sitting top of the SPFL, 1 point ahead of Celtic. This will be uncharted territory for Celtic and Rangers, though, because it is in front of no fans. So it's going to be really interesting to see what comes about in the Old Firm this week. And without further ado, I will be chatting to Celtic under-18s coach Darren O'Dea.
He's in! Hendrik Lassland! That is sensational!
So it is that time of year again. Celtic take on Rangers this Saturday, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by a man who has played in plenty of Old Firms himself, Darren O'Dea. Darren, thanks for joining me.
Not a problem.
So just before we get into this actual game, what have the last couple of months been like for you getting back to football in these weird and uncertain times?
Yeah, it has been weird. Just trying to get back onto a pitch. There's so many protocols and procedures that need to be followed. It's very much an inconvenience, if you like, but one that we'll all happily take on if it means getting players back on the pitch. So we've been back in the training, I think about 6 weeks now. But there's a lot of work that goes into getting us back on the pitch. But as I said, the kind of things we have to go through are well worth it to see the players kicking the ball again.
Yeah, and for this game, Celtic have had a couple of issues going into it. Near Beaton has been ruled out, Ryan Christie's out, Alton Edwards is out as well, all because of COVID. And I suppose you also represented Ireland and the issues that Ireland have had in this international break. And Stephen Kenny, the Ireland manager, has cut a frustrated figure because all of the talk and the build-up to the Ireland games have been around COVID, have been around positive tests. Have you found that that's been a bit of a distraction, a bit of a thing that you have had to get used to?
Oh, absolutely. The distraction is huge. But the reality is we're living in a completely different time than we've ever seen, than most of us are you've ever seen. A unique situation that I sympathise hugely with Stephen Kenny, how frustrated he is, but this is just the reality of it. And it, as a manager at any level, you literally can wake up one morning and get a phone call to say someone's got symptoms and has to get tested. And the reality is we're living with it now. So these, I call them inconveniences, are going to happen all the time. And it's very, very frustrating, but there's absolutely nothing anyone can do about it. And especially for wanting to function in terms of the football industry, we're just going to have to accept this is part of it, and it's going to be part of it probably for the foreseeable future.
So this is probably the biggest game of the year so far. Celtic taking on Rangers, first versus second, kind of back where it used to be a couple of years ago. Can you remember your first Old Firm derby?
Oh, you're testing me. The first one, yes. Well, you might end up finding that I'm wrong in this. I'm pretty sure actually it was at Celtic Park. I think we lost 1-0. If I'm right in saying Hugo Ekiog scored maybe an overhead kick or something, it was kind of an outrageous goal he scored. But I came on for the last 30 minutes, I think, of the game, and obviously I'd experienced them as a fan and as a kid growing up in the academy. But actually playing them was a little bit surreal. It was fantastic. And then obviously I had some really, really good experiences after that in them. Special atmospheres, and obviously probably the saddest thing for this Saturday will be that the fans will be missing. The atmosphere is electric, and the intensity it brings is obviously not going to be there. So I feel for supporters, this game deserves supporters in it. But as I said, that's the situation we're in. The two teams will obviously get on with it, and it's still an enormous match.
Yeah, so it probably is uncharted territory for Celtic and Rangers in the sense of there will be no fans in this game for probably the first time ever if there wasn't a game where fans weren't allowed in. But how big a difference do you think that's going to make? Because it seems like this rivalry does drive off the fans.
Yeah, I spoke about this yesterday. I suppose you won't know till after the game, but obviously it's at Celtic Park. The atmosphere the Celtic fans create is second to none. Of course, it adds and feeds to the team, and they have a huge, we call it the 12th man or whatever. But Rangers won the last time at Celtic Park. So if you look at the kind of form guide, they coped in that arena and performed really well. I was at the game back in December of last year. So how much it affects the game, I'm not too sure. You can kind of speculate on that all you want. I actually think it'll probably might affect the players that have played in this game more. They are used to having a huge atmosphere to play, and maybe the ones that it'll be an easier baptism of fire, if you like, for the ones that haven't played in it before, because the game will be seriously intense. Obviously, every staff member and player will know how much is riding on these games, but with not having the atmosphere as well to contend with and deal with, might play into fans. But in all honesty, I think both squads are well capable of dealing with big, big atmospheres. What it's like without the fans in it, I still think there'll be enough intensity in the game as normal. It's just disappointing more from a fan and from a spectacle point of view. The fans aren't going to get to experience it because they're second to none, these atmospheres.
What's the build-up like the week building up to an Old Firm derby? Is it more intense? Is the camp a little bit more tense? Or is it very much treated like every other game? Or is there definitely a feeling that there's a big game coming up this weekend?
Yeah, no, you're very, very aware of the game. Of course, especially in Glasgow, the media it's covered the back with Celtic Rangers. Every fans forum, every radio station, TV station is covered with the kind of the build up to the game. So it builds up to a fever pitch, and the players are very aware that how you actually train in the lead up will be very similar. And within the actual Celtic camp, it'll be similar. Obviously, these boys now are coming off the back of an international break, and a lot of them will be away with international teams. So, in all honesty, there'll be no build-up for them. They'll be concentrating with their national teams. They'll be absolutely aware of the enormity of the game once they come back. But that build-up mightn't be as similar as what they're usually used to. But yeah, you are very aware in a normal week, if you like, when you're with the squad, how intense the city gets leading up to the game.
And when you actually get into the game, it's very noticeable that the first 10 minutes is sort of messy. Teams are trying to stamp their authority on the game. There's not a lot of football played in the opening 10 minutes of an Old Firm game. What's it like actually playing in those games? Firstly, in the first 10 minutes, are you just trying to get your feet, or are you nervous in this game, or what's it actually like to play in one of these games?
First of all, you say the first 10 minutes, you're right. My experience of it never died down. So that was the norm. That was the norm in a game. Maybe it was slightly more intense. It definitely was more intense for the first 10 minutes. But normally in any game of football, it's like that for 10, 15 minutes while teams feel each other out and someone then takes hold of the game. Where these games, I felt the atmosphere was like that and the kind of intensity was like that for the full 90 minutes. It never died down. In the lead up to the game, in terms of actually starting the game, You're very much, well, certainly I can only speak personally, I always visualised as a player maybe how I would defend or how I would attack and how I would pass the ball and visualise maybe positive things in the game. When it was the lead up to the Rangers game, all I was thinking of is a tackle, is running and competing as hard as you possibly can, hurting a little bit. So that probably, if I'm sharing that experience with others and I'm kind of relating that to other people, I think that's what leads to the lack of quality sometimes for the first part of the games, is people are thinking about laying a marker down. I think the games have changed over the last kind of maybe 5-6 years, and they're more strategic and tactical, and you see more football. You see, I think you see more quality in the games, but certainly when I was a player, it was who could compete harder and essentially who would lay a marker down earlier and go on from there. But my experience with them, they never died down. From the first to the 90th minute, you were on edge.
Yeah, and we spoke about the fans and the fact that they're not going to be here. Does the rivalry bleed into the players as well in the same way that the fans feel it? Or is it purely a professional rivalry in the sense of these are the guys that are standing in the way in the title? Or do the Celtic players actually feel the rivalry, what this means to the fans? Do they feel that when they're going into this game, or is it just professional?
I think you'll have varying degrees of where that is. I think Scottish players, obviously Celtic will have actually Celtic fans playing for them. I think Callum McGregor, they'll have boys that have been through the academy. I think Callum came through the academy from probably talking 9-10 years old. James Forrest has obviously come through the academy. So these guys will have more a level of understanding and probably will feel what a fan feels. The other guys that are maybe coming from foreign countries will absolutely understand the rivalry, but they might see it more professionally that these are the guys in our way to winning another title. So probably the level of kind of understanding is different, but there's no doubt that every player is very, very aware of how big this game is and how much it does mean to fans. But as I said, you'll get players in the team that are actual Celtic supporters. And I don't want to say it means anymore and they try anymore. It's not that, but they might feel that a little bit more pressure maybe. I certainly knew when I'd grown up into the games, I felt pressure because I knew I'd Celtic family, I'd friends. I knew what it meant and I knew how it would affect people right around me, where people coming from foreign countries, it's going to affect them, but maybe their family, they're not Celtic fans, so it's not going to affect you. I suppose that's the same when you play international football as well. I think international football, you know who you're affecting, and you can see the effect because your family members are part of it. Celtic will have some players like that and some players not, but no doubt all players know the significance of the game.
The manager rivalry is quite interesting now with Steven Gerrard in charge of Rangers. Neil Lennon, was Neil Lennon still there, or had he just left when you came through at Celtic?
No, Neil Lennon was, when I broke through as a player, was the captain. Then when I kind of had established myself, was the first team coach, and then took over as interim boss for 8 games at the end of, I can't think of the year, maybe 2010. So I played under him for 8 games and after that I kind of moved on. But I've experienced Neil Lennon as I said, as a teammate, a coach and a manager. So I know him very well.
So how does Neil Lennon, I feel like Neil Lennon has definitely mellowed a little bit in the last couple of years. So how has he changed from captain of the club, player of the club, to manager, and then his second stint now, what's changed with Neil?
Probably deep down, nothing. I think what the manager's strengths are what has carried him as a player and now to be a hugely successful Celtic manager. He's got an incredible drive and appetite to win. He's relentless in it. And the standards he set, when I felt him when he was the captain, the standards he set for players, and he won't allow them drop below that. So he was a hugely influential person in the club, and now he's obviously at the head of the tree. But how he's changed, I think he's spoken kind of honestly and openly about, maybe you talk that word mellowing, I've heard that. I think that's maybe he's adjusted just to how you have to deal with players. And I think any good manager that has longevity has to do that. He clearly has had longevity. He's been managing now for I think it's probably not far off kind of a 10-year anniversary, because I'm thinking of when he took over, when I was there, 2010 maybe. So it's 10 years he's been, to be at the level he has for that length of time, and I don't think he's been out of work for any period of time. You have to be able to adjust and adapt. The way you dealt with players 10 years ago is different now, and it will be different in 10 years' time to come. So I think that's a mark of his adaptability, if you like. But I think the core beliefs and kind of his personality is still the same. It's just maybe how he portrays that over to players is slightly different.
So going into this game, as I said, Nir Beaton is out, Hatem El Hamid is out, Ryan Christie is out, and Odson Edwards is a doubt as well. We're not really sure if he's going to be back. What do you think going into this game, how are Celtic set up to knock Rangers off top spot, if you want to put it that way?
they've got a big squad, and you think off the back of this, just to use Shane Duffy as an example, is potentially going to play three international games, then plays against Rangers, then next week I believe is they play AC Milan. They've got last year's cup final. I don't know where that sits just now. They've got obviously other cup fixtures that'll start up. There's so many games at Celtic, and especially if you're successful, which this team has been successful for a number of years now. So they have a big squad for that reason. They'll be able to cope, and I'm sure the manager, whatever team he picks, he'll be fully confident. No matter, the players you're talking about are very influential. They're very good players, but they've got very good players as well, that maybe haven't played as much. So I think the manager would be, as much as he'll be disappointed he's missing them, he'll be still very confident that the players he can pick from, he's got plenty of talent to still win the game.
Just before I let you go, Darren, do you think the rivalry is back to where it was over the last couple of years? I know Rangers have definitely improved over the last 3 to 4 years, and they beat Celtic for the first time in, I think it was over 10 years at Celtic Park last year. So where do you sit on Rangers? Are they challengers for the title this year? Do you think Celtic are just that little bit better?
I think they're challengers, yeah. I think they were challengers last year. Come December, the game you're talking about, they went top of the league. We went into the winter break, and Celtic then just hit a different level, a different gear once the break had finished from January onwards. So yeah, they're absolutely challengers, no doubt. You can't dispute that. Listen, in terms of the level of the two teams, Celtic have won the last 10 domestic trophies available. So Celtic are the dominant team, and Celtic are the favourites, and rightly so. But each season is you're built on its own merits. So at the minute, the two teams are nip and tuck. How long that goes for, I don't know. Saturday won't decide the league title, but it'll obviously give it'll give whoever wins the game that edge until the next game, if you like. And that's what it's like at the two clubs. It'll be nip and tuck until someone falls. And Celtic have obviously shown they've got a real strong temperament to have that defeat last December and then to find another gear. Whether Rangers have that, it remains to be seen. But they are absolutely challengers. There's no doubt about that.
I think I actually spoke to you around about this time last year as well about this, but the Celtic were going for the 9 in a row then. They're going for the 10 in a row this time. It's never been done. It's the thing that everyone talks about. It's dominating the coverage all around Scotland. Is that felt in the club? Is the pressure off the 10 in a row being felt right now?
You're saying everyone talks about it. Media and fans talk about it. I need to explain this right, that of course it's not lost on the club. I'm sure it's not lost on anyone. Certainly Neil Lennon knows Celtic tradition and history as well as any manager probably ever. But these guys don't try harder this year because there's a 10 in a row, wherever you kind of want to put it. These guys have won the last 10 titles. The last 9 titles, and then they've won the last 10 trophies available. They are relentless no matter what. They want to win the next trophy that's in front of them. So there's no, people might want to hear that I don't believe there can be extra motivation with this group. This group have won every title available to them in the last 10. So they've got a fantastic attitude to winning. In order to do that, you must be on top of your game throughout, and they have been. So from a fan's perspective, a media perspective, I understand the furore around it from both sides. But in all honesty, this is the next title in front of them, and that's what they'll want to win. And I kind of discussed yesterday that the world won't stop at the end of this year, that hopefully Celtic can go on and win another title, but they'll look to then go on and win the next one after that and the next cup after that. And that's the Celtic pressure you have to live with, that the next title's the most important and the next cup's the most important, and you have to try to win every one of them. So they've done that fantastically well to a level that I've certainly never seen. Hopefully they can continue that.
Darren O'Dea, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Forget Arsenal, I'll come on to them in a minute because they're a disgrace. Mustafi's got to be stronger than that. It's pathetic defending. And that second goal, a set piece, no concentration, no marking at the edge of the box. It really is bad. He's walking. Xhaka's walking, Ozil walking. They're walking. Don't walk at Wembley. Don't walk on a football pitch. Run. Absolute disgrace they are. They're an absolute disgrace. Walking on a football pitch at Wembley. Giving up. Spineless. The team have shown them nothing. I have to say, their football's been bad. The passing of the ball's been bad. Not really like the defending for a long time, not really like the leadership, the character for a long time and the spirit on the pitch, but you've always liked the football. I don't even like the football anymore. Arsenal just failed. Full stop.
Now, welcome back to Team 33. So as I mentioned before the break, I left the pod this week in the hands of the very British man, Kieran Bradley, who caught up with a couple of the lads from the Socially Distanced Sports Bar, a new podcast available now on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That will be available, the podcast as well, in the OTB Podcast Network if you want to listen back to the full chat. Here is how Kieran got on with the lads.
Due to a collection of sort of personal and collective insecurities off the ball, it's very rare that we will actually introduce and give airtime to another sports podcast. But in these strange times, we've decided that we're going to break tradition. So I'm delighted to welcome the lads from the Socially Distant Sports Bar, Mike Bubbins, Ellis James and Steph Guerrero. Lads, how are we doing?
Very good. Kieran. How are you?
All good, mate. All good. Well, thank you, mate. Yeah, very good. Thanks for this.
Yeah, no worries. Listen, I'm happy to give you a little bit of airtime on this side of the pond. So before we start, Ellis, have you eaten?
I'll show you. I've actually got a bowl of porridge ready, which I'm going to eat cold because we're recording with you first, and then I'm going to ask for a 5-minute porridge break, and then we're going to record the next episode. Because, I just cannot work on an empty stomach. I had Weetabix about 2.5 hours ago. It's not enough. Bubbins, on the other hand, is like a camel, so he ate about in August.
Yeah.
And he's perfectly happy.
Pills and the occasional sip of water is fine.
Yeah. Pills is in little, it's not an MDMA.
Yeah, I thought the jaw was going.
You'd think he'd be a bit happier if he's
constantly wired.
I mean, I'm pretty heavy for such a pill, man.
Imagine how big you'd be if you weren't dancing.
No, yeah. This is what Iggy Pop would look like if you didn't take those sorts of pills.
Piled on the death bastard protein powder. That's the way to go. Listen, thanks, Mill, first of all, because I believe Off the Ball and myself got a little shout out on the last pod, and I believe I was nicknamed the Dickie Davis of Dublin.
How wrong I called you that.
Be proven to be. Well, let's look at it this way. I reckon. So we've got Davis and Lynham on this end of the spectrum, and we've got your new bonds and your keys around this end of the spectrum. So I'm gonna walk that fine line.
I'd say you're Frank Boff.
Yeah.
Listen, thanks, Mill, first of all, for taking the time. So, you know, lockdown's obviously been a strange time for everyone, but I suppose there are a few winners. And given the success of the podcast, you guys might be well in amongst it, alongside the key workers, obviously, but we'll forget those.
And the listeners, if I could say, I think they're the real winners. People love great content.
It's not about them, but us.
They're not being interviewed now.
What are they doing? Listening? Wow.
Big wow.
How passive do you want to be? Sat there listening. Literally just your eardrums vibrating. You're doing nothing else. And that's involuntary.
Mike, if nothing else, you have a unique approach to marketing, as abundantly clear on the podcast. But, I was saying to you guys pre-recording that I've been publicly shamed or privately shamed even into the Patreon, and I would highly recommend anyone who's not familiar with the pod to do the same. So just to kind of spool back, I suppose, a little bit. Now, obviously, the name of the pod, Social Distance Sports Bar, is they laughed at you in January when you came up with that, but
exactly,
how wrong they were. But so was the concept kind of in train before lockdown hit, or did it come around, you know, due to the circumstances?
Steph, go on. Probably due to the circumstances, I think. I think there's always been an idea to get these two to work together. I worked with Ellis when I was back at the BBC on his Feast of Football podcast. I've talked to Mike about it because our kids go to the same school, so we kind of bump into each other on the school run all the time, and we talked about doing stuff, but we'd never really nailed down the format.
I'm not just a dad on the school run, by the way. I'm not some...
He is, that's all he is. He's just a man. He's just a man on the school run.
Yeah.
And he looks like funny. He looked
I'll be honest, I've been blagging it for 6 months, I'll be honest.
Yeah. He's a very, very well-established comedian in and of his own right.
Not really.
He's not even Welsh. That's what I heard. No.
He's putting that on for us.
Hates rugby.
Can't stand rugby.
Like but
rugby.
He's willing to put the work in and pretend.
God, he's a scholar. What a scholar.
Whatever, boy, mine.
So I think the original format was going to be... The original idea was going to be that we sort of just sat around and talked about YouTube clips and documentaries, and then... I think we just got it off the ground so quickly because we thought that that was where people were going to want something. You know, you can't watch live sport. That was the idea back in March. We'll do something and we'll get it out there as quick as we can. And we've kind of, probably the first five episodes are what would have been pilots, I guess. Do you know what I mean? They're not the finished product, the first five. They're good. And they're better than most things out there anyway, but they're not good. Thanks.
You know what I think they are, the first five?
ABC.
They're about sport. Actual sports podcasts.
Oh, God.
Which we quite quickly realised was the great weakness of it.
That's been done, isn't it? That's been done, to be fair.
That's been done by us for 5 hours.
No, it's not a sports podcast about Alice's Nan Sunday dinner, though.
Absolutely. Nancast.
Do you know what I find quite a bold approach to it? That is, I'm amazed that wasn't the name of the episode.
Yeah. Willie.
The name of the latest episode should have absolutely been Commercial Quantities of Penis, but
Commercial Quantities of Shaft.
Shaftcast. So, I was going to say it's a fairly bold approach insofar as, right, we're going to talk about clips that on a podcast you can't actually see. So you're going to have to put together in your mind's eye until you can reach the YouTube. But no, it's absolutely fantastic. And you guys have done a great job so far. So I was just checking this morning, actually, in terms of the charts and where you guys stand in the sports podcast. Maybe a bit off the ball. Who's counting? Don't worry about it. But then you are very big in Japan, I've seen. You've just entered the Japanese podcast. So, Michael, that T-shirt proved to be true after all.
I might write a song about that.
Where are we in the Japanese? Where are we in the Japanese charts?
I think you're in new. That's where it came up on.
Ellis is all about the money. Look at him. Look at his money.
Yeah, look at that. He's looking at pound signs. The yen rattling his eyes.
Big market, Tokyo.
Oh, yeah. 20 million people there.
A few Hello Kitty t-shirts with Mike Bubbins' face.
Oh, yes, please. Come on. I'll happily do an episode just on manga. That's fine. I'll wear blue lycra and I will just do manga the whole episode.
Yeah. So you guys, for those that might be unfamiliar, Elle and Mike, you guys are stand-ups, among many, many other things, polymaths that you are. Sure. But it must be nice to have kind of found this oeuvre, particularly for you guys, obviously yourself as well, Steph, but while gigs have kind of maybe taken a downturn, obviously I know you haven't got quite around to getting honked off just yet, but you never know.
He's a proper fan.
Nothing but the best. I appreciate that it must have been a fairly difficult time, so it must be nice to have that kind of outlet for you guys.
What I loved about it from the very beginning was that recording it felt like I'd gone to the pub with my mates. So probably the first 16 or 17 episodes, we used to have a drink. And then we had to do one in the morning where we didn't have a drink and crucially realised it was funnier. But I was still having as much fun. So now we do morning records.
On meth.
Try our best to. And it just sets me up. Like, I'll be buzzing all afternoon now. I'll be in such a mood.
From the meth, or
from the meth. Actually, if anything, I find meth makes me a little bit jittery and occasionally quite down. But
the meth adverts. Oh, yeah. God, the meth marketing board are going to pull the ads.
Yeah, I did. I did stand up in Adelaide, and there was a big crystal meth scene. Oh, yeah. And they all used to go to a thing called Clipsal and take crystal meth. And what a great advert for abstaining, for abstention that was. Because yeah. The gigs, sounds I would awful. Say, were unplayable. But anyway, I digress.
Well, for me, Kieran, it suited my essentially lazy nature. I built a pub in my house. So it means rather than drive to Sheffield or Leeds or Manchester or London or... I mean, Ellis is a grafter when it comes to stand-up as well. I mean, he puts the hard yards in as well. I'm not like that at all. So I can just walk into my pub in my garden, sit on a chair and do the show. That suits me down to the ground.
Yeah. You've cracked it.
I think hard work's overrated.
Yeah.
It's a much zone for a reason.
what Steph does is Steph puts in hard yards, but he doesn't warn about it. So Steph always pretends that actually it hasn't taken him all day to edit, but we know it has.
Yes.
And yet because he's not going on about it, we never thank him.
And that's
it's, you know, and the dance goes on.
Yeah. It's all good.
I find the key is very much in gratitude. That's definitely the way to keep greasing the wheels.
Yeah, we're trying to keep Steph on his
toes. As soon as you bring in what we call extrinsic reward, like Steph does the hard work because it makes him feel good, right? If we then said, well done, Steph.
Yeah.
Then he would come to accept, you know, expect that all the time. And then when we don't
doing it
do
to
it,
please you rather than
when
please
we don't
myself.
When we don't say that one week by mistake, then he's got his you know, he's in a grump. Whereas we just keep taking it for granted, everyone's happy.
In a way.
To be fair to Alison, like very early on we said that we weren't prepared to do anything other than watch sports clips and have a laugh.
Yeah. And there's actually a, because we discussed the show in a WhatsApp group. Yeah. There's actually a sub WhatsApp group of just me and Mike where we continue to say we're not going to thank him, we're not going to show him any gratitude at all. We need to keep him on his toes.
You're very much like the real IRA.
yeah. I'm not gonna obviously that'll split the room in Ireland, but
yeah. I just found out you made that audience. Joke.
Yeah.
I didn't bring the IRA into it.
We're very much just guests here. Yeah.
Let's all just get on.
Well, that's all we've got time for. No.
Yeah. Kieran's now been sat.
Just the career just flashes ahead of me. So, boys, I just wanted to in the preparation for this podcast, and I do prepare, as you can absolutely tell. I just wanted to surmise for a few of the listeners who might not be on the Patreon.
Oh, go on.
Indeed, our freeloaders.
Yeah.
Just to introduce perhaps Mike Bubbins. So, a few of the stories that I've noted down. So, Mike, stitch up. Mike has dump tackled an elderly Larry David lookalike. He has accidentally hoovered up his own son's testicles.
Only one of them.
Watched his PE singular. Sorry. Watched his PE teacher buy his class a job lot of jazz mags.
Yeah.
He's seen a Scotsman wave a jobby around a crowded bar, and he's nearly killed a child with a shot put. So I suppose my question really is for towards maybe Ellis and Steph. What's it like working with a pathological liar?
Every time a story comes up, you go, well, that's just nonsense, isn't it? But they're so in-depth. They're so in-depth that bang on that they can't... You can't make things up that... Well, I don't know. Either he's a genius or he's lived a life or both. Both is possible.
He's either lived a life... which is my suspicion from the bags under his eyes. Or he is the most extraordinary liar I've ever met.
Yes.
And I don't mind either, really, because it's entertaining.
Well, the jazz mag story, a bloke got in touch on Twitter and just said, he said, I don't care if you made that up. It was hilarious. I said, yeah, but I didn't make it up. And then a bloke who was on the same minibus... to back me up, and so I was there. That happened. That's not me.
Still got it.
I still got the message.
Mike, do you ever? Sorry, just to clarify, I'm not saying in this particular instance, but given the fact that you were a PE teacher, do you ever crave for the fact that you weren't a PE teacher in the 80s. Would you have preferred that? A little less regulation a bit?
Well, it depends what sort of PE teacher you were in the 90s.
I don't mean like a disgraced PE teacher.
Oh, no, no. I mean, nothing like that. But there's nothing stopping you being like a... unless you do something really bad to a kid, it's almost impossible to get sacked from teaching. It's a you know... and I've tested that as well, because you can live and teach like an 80s PE teacher and you'll keep your job. You'll never get promoted. You'll never get sacked. And like I said, I was to pride myself in being home by 3:30, whatever, 6 o'clock, you know.
The beauty is, of course, sorry, I don't mean to cut across, but the beauty is that a lot of PE teachers still dress like 80s PE teachers. Yeah. So the fashion trend is very solid.
There's a uniform, isn't there? I mean, weirdly, the way that I dress is sort of coming back into fashion a little bit now with some trendy types, in which case I'll have to move on because I don't like to, I'll have to start going into the 80s. I'll start wearing shell suits and stuff if that happens.
Yeah.
But I surprised myself in my short shorts and nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I know. Imagine that. At the time as well, I was in buff shape as well. I really was in great nick.
Yeah.
In fact, I said to my wife recently, because I got very heavy, I was pushing 20 stone. And when I met her, I was sort of 14 stone of essentially Welsh / Greek god.
So she got more for her money then?
Yeah. Well, but I said this is your fault, Kelly, really. She said, how is it my fault? I said, well, because while I was single, I was always in great nick, because I was always out, you know, trying to meet girls and stuff. I said, but I'm happily married. I don't fool around. Mm-hmm. I said, put it this way. If I was single, I'd be buff again in about 6 weeks. And she said, well, sod off and I'll see you in 6 weeks.
Very much the stick and the stick approach to
it. Yeah. Which is, she's hard worker and she's good with the kids.
Yeah, you're very much bringing the looks there, Mike. And listen, you know, just brawn.
Don't praise maybe, people. But don't there you praise go. People.
Look at that ostentatious way of drinking that tea. There is no way you're not doing that for a YouTube that. Audience.
I wasn't aware of it, sorry.
But listen, like, I've got to say, the pod, I think, it resonated with me and a few mates of mine, as you say, Ellis, because it does feel, has that very familiar feel, and it's quite actually a rare thing to for the listener to kind of have the audio edifice kind of melt away a little bit, and you kind of feel like you're in the room. So that's a real achievement, and obviously that's natural because of the dynamic between the three of you. But given that, like, obviously... that's very important. But I wonder if you guys have ever thought about potentially branching out, maybe doing a few interviews with the likes of, say, Geraint Thomas or Jonathan Davis or people like that, because obviously there's such a Welsh like theme running through the show that it would be really good to get you guys there, get you guys talking to them. I don't know if that's on the cards at all.
I think we've talked about it. If and when this COVID stuff goes away or gets managed better, we can do live shows, then I think that'd be an interesting aspect of a live show. I'm not sure it works well with the, we do all this by Zoom, obviously, every week. Well, I've known Steph for sort of 5 years. I've known Alice well for sort of 10 or 12 years now. So I think bringing another person into a Zoom, I mean, this is evidence today, really. It's going to sound awkward and stilted.
That's straight up on the LinkedIn there for me.
Awkward and stilted.
No, I'd like to do it. I'd like to do that live. I think, and there's people that we love that would like to do it as well. So that'd be great for us. Like, I think Jonathan Davis would be up for it, which would be amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah,
I'd like to do that.
A thing that's been very satisfying is a tremendous amount of our heroes listen to the podcast. So an ongoing discussion on the WhatsApp group is that a first 15 of socially distanced sports bar listeners would win a World Cup.
Yeah.
Would win a Grand Slam.
Absolutely.
And I can't believe it. I know that Mike and Steph can't believe it either. So, and a lot of them as well, especially the older players who were playing in a different time, a less media managed time, have got fantastic stories to tell. Yeah. And I think that would be really good fun if we did that live.
I think that's the key, isn't it? Like, because we find it a lot of the time is that obviously you know, perfectly understandably, a lot of people are very media managed and media savvy, but you want someone who's able to you know, let the walls down a little bit. For example, we have John Giles on every Thursday, which is just an absolute pleasure. Like, he's such a legend of the Irish game, but obviously the Premier, the top flight game in England as well. And he's been on, you know, for 30, 40 years on the telly, but he's just unbelievably knowledgeable, but also he has that little bit of devilment in him as well. Yeah. So it's always nice when you get a little bit of that, you know. But so I was like, given the Irish kind of theme there, so Ellis, you mentioned on the pod that David O'Doherty had showed you around a few of the pubs in Ireland. Now, obviously, one of the themes of the pod is that Wales is a ridiculously small place,
yeah,
where the degree of separation is down to probably one. I saw David O'Doherty in town not 5 days ago, because Dublin is basically exactly the same. If you have a bad breakup, like, it's done. Nothing happened. But what I would say about David O'Doherty is body confidence, right? So he was in the most tight spandex, like, cycle gear I've ever seen.
He loves
nothing
it.
Was left to the imagination, and it's beautiful. But
he loves his sport. What did you make? David as well.
He does, but he's a Spurs fan.
Yeah, he's a Spurs fan and a cycling fan, and he was a very good rugby player in his youth.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was. He played in the same under-18s team as Brian O'Driscoll, I think.
Wow.
He was a good... And because of his... I don't want this to sound insulting, but because his comedy is whimsical, you can't really imagine him getting stuck in on the rugby pitch. Mm. But I've played football with him once or twice, and he's a very knowledgeable football fan. So yeah, we've got a lot of time.
Yeah, you get that feeling. Like, I think not to big myself and a few friends up maybe, but the audience you tend to attract to is, but it tends to be a little bit more knowledgeable. Like, as in, we kind of go into the, you know, you guys go into the weeds for sport a little bit in a good way, you know, like, you kind of dig below the surface, and I suppose that's what we try and do as well. But on the Irish thing, like, so do you have much time in Ireland, El? Have you been over much? Like,
I've done gigs in Ireland. Is it the Liberty? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I've done gigs there, and I did smaller shows a few years ago. And if I was touring, I would, or, you know, John and I will probably go on a tour when that's allowed, and we will always put in Irish dates. So yeah, and I've been to Dublin to watch Wales play football as well.
And there's a load. I mean, my family on my mother's side were Irish, were Sheens, and then on my wife's side, they're Murphys and they're O'Brien. There's a lot of Irish in Wales because of work, I suppose. But
yeah,
we were over there in February. My little boy's playing for Cardiff Schools. We play against Terenure College over there. And I've been going to, like, Al, to see the rugby over in Dublin since I was 18 years of age, I suppose. We had a great time over there. Ended up in a place called O'Donoghue's the one night on Suffolk Street, having a good old sing song. That was fantastic. So yeah, I love. I said about us on the podcast and staff on the podcast that I did that open top bus tour of Dublin, and I just came. The overwhelming feeling I had at the end of it was A, that I loved the city, but B, that I'd never been so keen on Welsh independence in my life. As soon as I got off the bus, I was ready to join it. You know, just join up the independence movement immediately.
The Cardiff's Farage, that's what they call you.
Yeah. I mean,
but no, that, like, there's definitely. I think there's a. Sorry, I didn't mean to cover. There's a real Celtic kind of fraternity for sure. Like, you see it. I think. Look, I mean, I have to confess, I'm mainly a football fan by a long stretch. But I think you really notice that in the Six Nations, for example. I think there's a lot of respect between the Welsh, the Irish, and the Scottish. Maybe given the fact that they just all hate England. Who knows? But
When Wales played Ireland in the final game of qualification for the 2018 World Cup, and we lost 1-0 and didn't qualify, I got the train from London down, and there were a lot of Irish fans on the train, and I was chatting to them, and it was a really, really pleasant way to spend 2 hours, and I had a drink with a couple of them in the pubs before the game, and you don't get that with football fans very often.
Mm-hmm.
I went to watch Wales play Scotland at Hampden, and it happened then. But I've always had a real laugh in Ireland. It's just the shame. Whenever Wales play football in Ireland, the game tends to be absolutely dire.
Yeah.
that's the worst aspect of it.
And in the old days, you had to get the sort of
the
fish guard to
guard
to Rosslare crossing, which was a horrendous crossing, wasn't it? And with a hangover, was 10 times worse.
Oh God! Yeah.
It doesn't. Oh my God!
There are very few. Cross-sections of society, let's say, that make me think, I don't want to be here more than a late-night ferry trip from, say, Holyhead.
Oh, God.
It used to be hilarious. When I first started going to Ireland, when I was 18 years of age, and things were a lot different in Ireland then. Like this, I don't mean to pee off any of your listeners, but I seem to remember getting there, and there wasn't like a motorway until just south of Dublin. There would just seem to be like country roads and everything's very laid back with the police back in those days. I don't know if it's the same now. So on on the way back on the Sunday, there would be just lads parked up on the side drinking cans. They were driving back to the ferry. I thought, what the hell's going on here?
Was that the police? Or was that?
Yeah. The police didn't care. And then I remember there was one roundabout near Rosslare, and we were driving past it. And there was this car that obviously hadn't seen the roundabout. And got over the roundabout and was like stuck on the roundabout. And so they're waiting for the AA or the RAC or whatever it is in Ireland to turn up. And in the meantime, they just had deck chairs out and they were just sat around drinking cans, waiting for somebody to turn up and tow their car. I thought, this is
wow.
Yeah, this is amazing.
So you consider that a holiday now, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, God, nice roundabout in Dublin would be lovely. just to get away, that's something would be nice.
Getting a suntan in 17 degrees.
I've got my top off after 12.
Yeah.
And just lock-ins everywhere. It was brilliant.
It's something else.
The shutters would just go up. Like, the shutters would go up on these pubs and then they'd just be full of Welsh and Irish fans just drinking till all sorts of hours. It was fabulous.
Yeah, it's great. I'll tell you what, I can't wait for that to be back soon enough. It does, like, without getting too kind of dim and gloomy, like, it really does throw into light relief how important those kind of things are. Because you guys talk about on the pod, obviously, briefly, that sport isn't really about the tactics and the breakdown and stuff. It's all about the crack, like, you know, with your mates and just the day and the occasion. And Steph, obviously, you put it very well in you risk the worst day of your life to have the best day of your life. And I think that's probably a perfect encapsulation of it, because it's very, there's no other type of it. Like, for example, I consider it like a signposting of my life. So, for example, if someone goes to me, September 2001, obviously bar 9/11, sorry. But like, I go, McAteer scoring against Holland, and the same day, England beating Germany 5-1. And then, you know, someone goes 2007, you're like, all right, where was I? United beat Roma, all this stuff. Like, it's an incredible signpost. And I think it's something that, in the absence of it, perhaps, Steph, I don't know if you agree, in the absence of sport, we kind of realise its importance a little bit more.
Oh, totally. That McAteer goal, by the way, is on my list. That's on my long list.
Oh, yeah.
So that's coming soon. Take today, so we're recording it on a Thursday, this interview, and tonight Wales are playing against England in a football international. Now, I'd either be going to Wembley to watch it and maybe actually meet Al face-to-face for the first time in months, or I'd be going to the local, you know, with my mates, the guys who we go to watch Wales games with, and we'd be hanging out and having a few beers. Whereas tonight, that's not happening, is it? And there's no crowd there, and it just doesn't feel, it doesn't feel like an international match day in my head today.
Do you know what
I don't know if you do, Al.
Do what it does, though? It does mean that if we lose, I won't care.
I can ignore it.
Much.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I'm not invested in it.
And it'd be like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So we haven't played England very much since 1984, since they ended the British Championships. And we have played them 5 times, I think, and lost each game. And they've really hurt. But I won't be particularly...
But if we win...
If we win,
this will be the most important game that's ever happened.
Yeah. But Al made a good point early on. When they brought football back without the crowd, and some commentators said, well, If you miss the crowds, if you're one of those people moaning about there's no crowds, then you don't miss football, you miss crowds. And Alice said earlier, I said, well, but you're an idiot if you think that, because sport is that mutual, that shared passion. It is being there with your mates or your rivals, or you can't take that away from sport. It's ridiculous.
No. Also, I do miss crowds.
Yeah.
I love crowd.
I love it.
But it is, isn't it?
I miss Oxford streams.
Yeah.
Six Nations games, you know, the half the fun of living in Cardiff is being around your local pub and all of a sudden there's 29 Frenchmen in there with you who all want to have a conversation and have a laugh.
All dressed like Napoleon.
With cockerels under their arms, but that's a big part of it. I think that's a huge part of sport.
So I think, because when we started doing this and there was no live sport on, and we sort of, or Steph had the idea of doing the clips, and everyone's got their favourite clip, everyone's got their favourite piece of sport, their favourite sports person, right? And like you said then, Kieran, it's the memories that go with that. I might not remember the score in a particular Wales game, but I remember that day, and I remember sort of jumping up in the air and getting carried out, you know, with my feet not touching the floor from the National Stadium because there was that many people crowded around me. I can remember the crack, as you call it. So I think there is nostalgia in what we do, but I think it works then because we talk about you mentioned at the top you can't see the sports clips we're talking about. It's because without sounding trite, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you can't see that. We're talking about the people and the experience and what it meant to us and what it meant to people listening to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think El chose the sunshine underneath by the Hibs fans at the CIS Cup final. I honestly cannot listen to that without welling up. No, I'm like, you know, there's a certain point where they hit where it's, 40,000, 46,000 people singing in unison, men. And it gets me every single time. And my mum actually, funnily enough, made the point years ago that whenever I'd be watching football, a song would a chant would start, and then afterwards there's this kind of roar because everyone's a little bit embarrassed that they've been singing alongside kind of their pals. But I don't think that's necessarily true. But I think it certainly has sport has the ability to bring people out themselves because.
Yeah.
Give you an example. Go on.
Well, with Hibs, they are a big club. They're certainly a big club in Scotland, but they were a tremendously unlucky club. And they hadn't won the Scottish Cup since 1904, I think. Mm-hmm. And they'd got to so many finals and lost. So when they eventually won it, that was over 100 years worth of pain and frustration.
Yeah.
Just being... just being all disappearing in one song. And you can, the way they're singing, it has a certain timbre to it, or there's just a quality to the singing that it's a century's worth of, you know, pain and frustration gone in an instant. And that's why I think it's so powerful.
I think that one particularly because the lyrics are amazing. They're very, if you look at the actual lyrics, it's just a love song. I mean, it's a love song, obviously. Yeah. The lads are, you know, it's a Dr. Higgs, but it's beautiful. And the sorrow, saying it again, you're like, yep, that's all the stuff they're exercising at that particular point. That's Scotland in one.
Well, just sorrow.
just sorrow.
It's also Wales. Well, my son, when we did well in the Euros in 2012, when Wales did well. 2012, wasn't it?
2016.
So when Wales did well in Euros 2016, my boy was, and we were watching the football, and he loved it. And we sort of get to a semi final, and we lost the semis, and we went to see the open top bus procession, which went just near to our house and everything, you know. And then the World Cup qualifiers roll around, and he just expects us to be in a World Cup. I said, "Well, we haven't qualified, mate." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "We're not playing in the World Cup." And it didn't compute. I said, "Well, how are we not in the World Cup?" I said, "Mate, we haven't been in the World Cup since just after the war." I said, "Just being Welshers, get used to it."
Which war? Oh, yeah, not any of the wars you remember.
Any of the wars.
Yeah, James McLean certainly broke a few hearts that night, didn't he? Bless him. We'll leave that there. It's no point raking it, girl.
But you wouldn't trade that in that instant. You wouldn't trade all those years when you were disappointed for that one instant of joy. It's just amazing.
Exactly, and I think actually just to bring that up for a second, Mike. I think you talked about Friends
Again as well.
It's an unbelievable book and worth rereading several times, which I've done. But he talks about there, because he's obviously a massive West Brom fan, talks about sport and kind of people's approach to sport. I he doesn't trust people that kind of follow Arsenal, but he respects people that actively don't like sport, because it's as if they've been hurt by it. They've had like a visceral reaction to it the other way. Yeah. So I always find that quite nice. But listen, there we go. Boys, I've taken way too much of your time as it is, but I really appreciate you guys taking the time to have a chat, and I wish you all the very best with the podcast. And just for those that might not have heard it, it's a socially distant sports bar. You can find it anywhere you get your quality pods. And I would sign up for the Patreon unless you want Mike outside your gaff with a screwdriver.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that could happen.
So that was Kieran Bradley chatting to the lads from the Socially Distanced Sports Bar. That is available to podcast or on YouTube as well, youtube.com/offtheball. We'll take a quick break. Back
to life. Off the ball. Back to
reality. The trophy holders Argentina, Maradona and all opened up against one of the outsiders, Cameroon. A foregone conclusion? By no means.
Oh, Mbeek! Oh!
This is a great football, and Cody's produced players and go out and play that rubbish.
Yeah. This kick can decide it all. The nation holds its breath. Yes!
Elf has been deferred and home away has been deferred, and we're on the air until 10 o'clock.
You are off.
We've got a term in Ireland that they use, like, give it a last jack. We will do exactly that tomorrow night. We will give it a last jack.
Donadoni. Good parry. Schillaci.
Dancing feet. Still dancing feet.
Bremer for West Germany with the penalty. And is that the goal that wins the World Cup?
Now then, that is all we have time for on Team 33 this week. Thanks to you for listening. And remember, if you want to listen back to any of that, you can find it as part of the OTB Podcast Network. The best place to find that is in the new OTB Sports app, available to download in the Google Play Store or Apple Store as well. And you can find us on YouTube as well, youtube.com/offtheball. All the podcasts are up and available now. You can listen back to the Roy Keane Origin Chat with myself and Owen O'Callaghan last week. Over the next couple of weeks, we do have a couple of interviews lined up. We will be chatting to the lads from FC United of Manchester, a new club that is set up in Manchester. So that's coming up over the next couple of weeks, if you want to keep an eye on that. But before that, we will be back again, same time, same place. But until then, take away, Johan.
Oh, the shame that will get if you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I love playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything, religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you. Disgrace.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.